From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you later this hour. Next hour, a special night with Stanton Friedman, the father of modern-day ufology. Also, 2 hours of your calls with Stanton. You've been lining up for the last several months wanting to talk with him about various UFO issues. Tonight's your special night. Here's some of the news of the day. President Bush is getting his veto muscles ready after the Senate passed a war funding bill that sets a deadline now for withdrawal of U.S. combat forces from Iraq by next April. Now, the 51 votes cast for the bill are nowhere near the 67 needed to override a veto, which Mr. Bush says he will deliver swiftly. The House passed the same measure on a 218-208 vote Wednesday night. A top Iranian security official accused the United States of seeking to undermine Iran's clerical regime by stoking sectarian and ethnic tensions in the country and apparently using newspapers and non-governmental agencies toward that goal. He said that the country would attack Israel and American targets throughout the world if Iran were attacked over its nuclear program. He says, "We are prepared to fire tens of thousands of these missiles every day." Well, now trouble in Taiwan with bees is worldwide. Something is really happening here. Taiwan's bee farmers are now feeling the sting of lost business and possible crop danger after millions of the honey-making plant-pollinating insects vanish during volatile weather there. Over the last 2 months, farmers in three parts of Taiwan have reported most of their bees gone. A beekeeper on Taiwan's northeastern coast reported 6 million bees missing for no reason. And one in the south said 80 of his 200 bee boxes simply have been emptied. This is one weird story. We've been covering it on Coast to Coast AM, and I continue to think back to the quote by Albert Einstein when he said, 3 to 4 years after all the bees disappear and die, humanity will follow suit. Here's a fascinating story for you. The peak of the next sunspot cycle is expected in the late 2011 or mid-2012. You know that year. Potentially affecting airline flights, communication satellites, and electrical transmissions. The forecasters can't agree on how intense it will be. A 12-member panel charged with forecasting the solar cycle says it is evenly split over whether the peak will be 90 sunspots or 140 sunspots. I'll tell you, the tie-in of the Mayan calendar makes this a very uncanny story, and that's why I'm turning to physicist Professor James McCanny to get his take on all of this. Jim, these scientists are battling over how many sunspots there's going to be. The bottom line is, this could be huge regardless of how many sunspots, huh?
Well, the sun is out of sorts. We've known that for a long time. And I have been noticing a couple things. Right now, one of the big topics at, say, American Geophysical Union meetings is the noctoluminescent clouds. And we've been seeing more and more of these. They're more active. And previously, they were very active around the time of the eruption of the Krakatoa volcano in the late 1800s. And so what I was looking at tonight, very interesting, we had a comet, 2P Encke, just past perihelion, and its tail swept out and actually touched Venus. So a very interesting alignment in this solar flare that we're seeing right now appears to be possibly a result of the comet aligning with Venus and an electrical discharge attaching to the sun.
I'm beginning to believe, Jim, that the Mayans may have been onto something now that has to do with the sun.
Well, the Mayans had many calendars, and 2012 is just a cyclic end of one of their calendars. It's not really the one they used for disasters, but be that as it may, the Mayans were always very superstitious, and whenever any of their calendars cycled, it was a time for them to look around, so to speak, to see if something would happen.
That's Professor James McKinney. Jim, thank you. I know we'll get you back on at a later date for a much more in-depth interview with you about all these things that are going on. His website is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. And in a moment, we're going to bring in Lawrence Joseph as well, who's an expert on what he calls Apocalypse 2012. And we're going to tie all this in tonight. And I'll get some of your reaction during the open line portion of the show. Well, a dream come true for physicist Stephen Hawking. The Brit has completed a zero-gravity flight in a specially modified plane. Professor Hawking, who suffers from motor neuron disease, he was able to float free, unrestricted by his paralyzed muscles and his wheelchair. This is just a great story. The flight, which lasted more than an hour, took a series of dramatic dives, allowing the professor to experience 25-second spurts of weightlessness. The event could be a step closer to Hawking's goal of going into space. Thousands of rich Japanese women were conned into believing lambs were valuable miniature poodles. Flocks were imported from the United Kingdom and Australia to be sold by an internet company as the latest must-have pet. The scam was crushed when a Japanese movie star complained on a talk show that her new poodle refused to bark or eat dog food. She then showed photos of the animal and was devastated when the host told her it was a lamb. Jack Valenti, the former White House aide and film industry lobbyist who instituted the modern movie rating system and guided Hollywood from the censorship era to the digital era, has died. He was 85 years old, died of complications of a stroke. And he does the Monster Mash no more. Well, he's died of leukemia. He was 69. Pickett Dubb, the Guy Lombardo of Halloween, died at the West Los Angeles Veterans Hospital. Monster Mash hit the Billboard chart three times when it debuted in 1962, reaching number one the week before Halloween, again in August of 1970, and for a third time in May of 1973. The Resurrections were appropriate for a song where Pickett gravely intoned the forever stuck-in-your-head chorus, "You did the Monster Mash." It was a graveyard smash. We continue to play this song during Halloween as a special bumper song. Bobby Bors Pickett dead at the age of 69. And a Dublin hospital has apologized for telling a family that their relative was dead, only to discover that he was alive when the morticians arrived. The patient, identified only as a disabled man in his 30s, was checked into the hospital during the Easter period where the staff certified him as dead. Morgue officials found him apparently awake and alert in his bed when they arrived later to take the body away. The hospital, which suffers from chronic overcrowding, as apologize to the family. Now, in a moment, we're going to check in with Lawrence Joseph about the Mayan calendar and what this all means, with science now saying that the sun is really going to heat up around 2011, 2012. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Lawrence Joseph has written on science, nature, politics, business for the past 25 years. In 1990, he published Gaia, The Growth of an Idea, exploring the Gaia hypothesis that the global ecosystem adjusts and regulates itself more like a living organism than a geological machine, as traditional earth science holds. I believe the planet is alive, too. His current book, Apocalypse 2012, A Scientific Investigation into Civilization's End, is a personal inquiry into the confluence of ancient Mayan prophecy and contemporary solar physics. And that's so important that we bring Lawrence on for a few moments tonight to talk with him about solar peak expected in 2011, 2012. Lawrence, first of all, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
My pleasure to be back. I'm doing great.
This is an incredible story with these forecasters now predicting that the next sunspot cycle will be around 2011 or 2012. And this is just absolutely astonishing that it is getting so close to the Mayan calendar. Do you see a tie-in here, Lawrence?
I certainly do. I can't explain exactly why the ancient Mayan astronomers were so accurate and could see so far into the future with such accuracy, but clearly they are on record. And just as clearly, the year 2012 seems to be a culminating time, as according to solar physicists who say, not only will the next solar climax, meaning the peak in sunspots, come in 2012 or thereabouts, but that it'll be 30 to 50% or more stronger than any that we've seen in recent recorded history. And now the news I bring for you, George, is that there's a growing body of scientific evidence that will be presented next month at the American Geophysical Union annual conference connecting sunspots to volcanoes and earthquakes.
Absolutely astonishing. And the bigger the sunspot, the bigger the event here on the planet?
Well, what they believe is it's the bigger the fluctuation. So if you go from lots of sunspots to none or vice versa in a very short period of time, the rate of change is what's really important. And in my book, I dwelt a lot on how sunspot activity correlated with hurricanes. I mean, with all the coverage of Hurricane Katrina and then Rita and Wilma, did anybody ever mention to you that was also the stormiest period on the sun when we're going through the stormiest period on the Earth? I mean, you know, they seem to overlook that fact. And now there's an entire symposium, an afternoon session being presented on how fluctuations in sunspot activity can cause major earthquakes and volcanoes. And since the next big peak is coming in 2012, that means the next big opportunity for sharp fluctuations from going from, you know, lots to none or none to lots. That's the most dangerous time.
Now, here's the big $64,000 question, Lawrence. Do you believe the Mayans, back thousands of years ago, knew that we would be coming into this peak season right around the time where we talk about this 2012 calendar period?
I believe it, George, and I can't explain it. But, you know, sometimes on a personal level, we all get a sense of trajectory. We get a sense of how things are going to play out in our own lives or the lives of others, or maybe we can even see it in a national issue or something like in political, something like that. The Maya people were obsessed with astronomy. I mean, they plotted and charted and knew everything from eclipses to the orbit of Venus to the movement of the solar system around the galaxy, whereas they never stopped to invent the wheel. They were truly a civilization with their heads in the clouds. And I believe that they somehow sensed that, yes, 2012, which is the year that many, many different Mayan prophecies from different parts of the Mayan kingdom point to, would be cataclysmic, and also the birth, as they see it, of a new era, a better era, but like as we discussed in our last conversation, all births are accompanied by blood and pain.
Lawrence, do you believe that they were experts in astronomy far greater than we even know of?
It stands to reason that their accomplishments are not totally known by us. It stands to reason that if they've come this close, and really we've only been, we meaning northern Western folks in the United States and in Europe and also in Russia and Japan, we've really only been studying their texts and listening to what they have to say since the Second World War. So it just stands to reason to me that some of the texts have not been presented to us. And certainly when I visit, I spent time in Guatemala with two Mayan shamans who insist that there are holy texts that have not yet been revealed for the very good reason that we are not yet capable, in their opinion, of responsibly using that knowledge. So there's more there. I certainly believe it.
Well, I got to tell you, when I saw this story today, and as you know, Lawrence, we've been talking about 2012 for years now on this program. I shook my head. I am going to continue doing programs with you and other experts as we get close to this date, with the idea that they knew something about science far greater than we had anticipated. How they got this knowledge, I do not know. I'm beginning to really wonder how advanced they might have been, Lawrence.
I would love to know more, and I have a little bit of an opportunity. I'm going to be going down to Mexico to attend the American Geophysical Union conference, where this data on correlating sunspots and earthquakes and volcanoes will be presented. And I would love if you had a chance after I come back to present those findings to you. But well, I'm
absolutely.
Thank you. And while I'm down there, I also hope to make contact with some of the Mexican Mayans and see what their take is on 2012. I believe it's largely the same as the folks I've met from Guatemala. But you know, maybe there's There's always might be a different interpretation or a slightly different angle, and if I find something, I'll be happy to share it.
So your book is called Apocalypse 2012, but the subtitle is A Scientific Investigation in Civilization's End. What the heck do you mean by civilization's end?
Well, it's not that the big off switch in the sky is going to be thrown, you know, and that everything's going to be over, but I wanted to investigate the possibilities that this transformation into a new era would entail a significant, perhaps wholesale destruction, or let's just say radical alteration of what we take to be civilization. I think there's lots of folks, for whether it's religious feelings or just gut level instinct, the feeling that we've gone down this path, and it's given us the technology and the time that you and I can talk and have millions of people listen to us. But we've gone down this path far enough, maybe too far, and that it's time for a change. Not necessarily that we want one, but that we're going to have one. And civilization's end could be something as simple as the destruction of the satellite network, which I write about in my book. I mean, you take out the satellites, and you take out telecom, you take out electronic fund transfers, you take out a lot of what we've come to rely on in modern civilization.
Well, and add, Lawrence, 4 or 5 more years of technology and relying on satellites. My God, you're talking about a calamity here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What about the increased risk of radiation to humans in space, to humans on this planet, with this increased sunspot activity?
Well, you're put your finger on exactly what the problem is, because what would take out the satellite network is also what would expose us to more radiation, because as you were well aware, I know that the depletion of the Earth's protective magnetic field is something that is being studied and speculated upon around the world. Pole reversal, where the North and South poles switch polarity, and that's a process that apparently takes a couple of thousand years. And in the meantime, our magnetic shields are down, Scotty. Forgive me. You know, I'm in Star Trek. I don't mean to make light, but it's something that everybody, you know, is aware of. The Earth's magnetic field, which emanates from the core and extends into the space around our planet, protects us from solar outbursts and the radiation from the sun. And the fact of the matter is that field is beginning to dampen, to weaken. California-sized cracks are opening up, and we are more vulnerable to the incoming radiation. On top of that, the incoming radiation is apparently increasing in strength and frequency as the sunspots grow stronger and the storms that come out of them are more furious.
When I first started talking about 2012, Lawrence, I thought maybe the Mayans knew of predictions of asteroids that might hit the planet, though that's always a possibility. I really believe now, I truly believe, that we're talking about solar peak activity, that the date that they've got is just absolutely unbelievable, but that some of the things we've talked about the violent disruptions that will occur are going to happen now.
Yeah. I think last time we spoke, you had a great line, which I've used frequently since. And you said, "Don't be scared, be prepared."
Yep.
And that is absolutely true. And it's incumbent upon every one of us, from individuals and families all the way up to the government. The government's got to do its share too. We've taken apart FEMA, which clearly was dysfunctional, but we haven't replaced it with anything. You know, everybody's got to do their share here. And if we do, and we keep the faith, we'll come through it. Not every one of us, but we'll come through it fine.
Well, but it will happen. I am now convinced of it. And, you know, I think I'm going to gear the direction of these programs about 2012 also to one of preparedness and safety because of the millions of people who listen to this program on a regular basis. Lawrence, I want them to at least have an upper hand. If nobody else believes us, if nobody else cares, I want them to see the signs. I do, you do, and this vast audience does, and at least we're the ones that should be prepared for this.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much, Lawrence. Appreciate it. Your website, apocalypse2012.com. The book's still available?
Absolutely. It's doing great.
All right. Good for you. Amazon.com, most major bookstores. It's well worth it. Keep it. and then let's just monitor over the next several years what's going to happen. Look, I anticipate staying on this program well beyond 2012, so I'm going to be around, and so will you too, but we'll just prepare ourselves. Now, when I come back, open lines, here are the phone numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line, 818-501-4721, and the wild card line, ready to go, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, now it's May 18th. That's it. The last day for those of you who are renewing and those of you who are subscribing to the Afternart newsletter to get the free double CDs of Art Bellswell interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin. You can call 1-888-727-5505 or you can go online at coasttocoastam.com. Man, I tell you, I go back to Los Angeles on Monday, and I feel like I've been in Asia, where it continues to have rains and monsoons, because it has not stopped raining in St. Louis, and I'm wrapping up 6 weeks here, and I'm telling you, I've had a few little nice days, but it has been raining, raining, raining. I'm looking forward to getting some sun in Los Angeles, even though they tell me it has rained there a couple days as well, which is kind of unusual, isn't it, for this time of year there? Let's go to the phones. We've got open lines for you right up until the top of the hour. Then we bring in Stanton Friedman for a special three-hour program about his belief in UFOs and why he thinks we've been visited. Stanton also will be a special guest in Roswell, New Mexico, around the 4th of July. On July 6th, I will be there doing the Coast to Coast program live. Stanton will be there with us as well. We'll tell you a little bit more about that later. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, it is your honor to be on the show. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes.
I had a question about the Mayan calendar. Now, as my understanding, we've only known that the Earth is round in the last several hundred years. Did the Mayans make the calendar on the knowledge that the Earth was flat? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Well, I don't think so. I think the Earth has been round for billions and billions of years as it was forming. I'm not a believer in the the flat planet Earth theory at all. But you bring up something interesting, though. What did the Mayans know? What did they base their knowledge and technology on? And it's everybody's guess. You know, the New York Times interviewed me for an article about the Mayan calendar 2012 date, which I believe will be published either in May or June. They also interviewed a lot of Coast to Coast guests talking about various theories, the things you've heard on the program. And everybody's got a different idea of what it means. Some means, you know, it's going to be a period of enlightenment. Others believe, which I've changed, by the way, because I thought originally, too, it would be that. I am now convinced that it has to do with this massive global change and a solar event. And how they knew it is anybody's guess. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yes, this is Doris in San Diego, California.
Hey, hello, Doris.
I wanted to ask if you had any time to watch the Democratic debates on CNN tonight.
I watched a little bit of it, but I've been reading all the various news sources. And I've got to tell you, Doris, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I kind of think I'm an independent, picking and choosing as I go. I was not impressed with the candidates. How about you?
Well, I just caught the last part of it. And I think I agree with you. And actually, I'm like you. I really don't have a lot of confidence in either party. And I do think that unless the Democrats do more than they are, we're going to have a shakeup for them as well as the Republicans had. And I just think neither side wants to do what the public clearly wants them to do.
See, what disappointed me tonight was that the candidates, no one there, seemed to me to be acting presidential. Did you feel that?
Yes, yes. And
I mean, they were just like people who wanted to be elected president, and you know, they didn't have that JFK charisma. They didn't have that Reagan-esque feeling. I mean, they didn't have that power of what I think the presidency of the United States should command. They just seem to be there tonight. And I think if they continue to do that, and I don't know how the Republican end is going to shape up, but I've got to tell you, what I've seen so far in terms of their presentation has very disappointed.
Will you have any candidates on your program?
I will probably invite the final candidates who get elected by their respective parties on the show.
We
won't have all the Democrats. What we'll do is I'll have the we will invite the Democratic candidate, the Republican, probably the Independent, the Libertarian. We've done that before. Not all of them accept, though, Doris. A lot of them simply shy away from the coverage of the program.
I understand that. And could I ask you, when Bill Clinton was an overnight sensation when he spoke at the Democratic convention, did you think when he was campaigning that he projected a way of seeming presidential? I think that he did, no matter what happened after when he was elected.
For a guy, Doris, who didn't have the credentials, you know, he was a governor, I think he acted more presidential than any of the candidates tonight did, and surely any of the candidates in his party did during his push and his run. Yes, absolutely. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thank you, sir.
It's Mike from Delaware.
Yeah.
Listening to you on WDEL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been listening to a brother Campy from out of Oakland, California, and he's predicting the world's going to come to an end in 2011.
Well, some people say that, 2011, 2012. Some people believe that.
Well, he believes, from what I understand, it's either 2011 at 1:11 or 2011 at 11:11.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I think that 1:11, 11:11 are spiritual, positive numbers. I don't think the end will come then, not at least at that time. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Hi, George. This is Mary from Independence. The reason why I'm calling is because, you know, we've been thinking about the bees and worried about the bees, right?
Sure, sure.
Well, let me tell you, the other day I was going sweeping off my deck, and I was going to come in, and this little black thing came in right behind me. I thought, what in the world was that? So I looked on the windshield, and I'm steadying this thing, and I'm going, it's big as a honeybee, and it has the same thing just like a honeybee, but it was black, George. It was black. And I don't know what in the world it was.
Was it buzzing around?
No, it was on the windshield, on the window, and it just sat there. And so, like I said, I'm like a kid. I'm steadying the thing. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, it looks like a honeybee. But, you know, honeybees are the brown. This was black, black. So I'm trying to shoo it out the door. So finally it went out the door. But I've never seen a black honeybee before. And then a couple of days after that, I'm sweeping off the deck. And this fly got on my patio table, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it. And I'm going, what in the heck is this? So I sat down, and I'm steadying the doggone thing. It wasn't a house fly. It wasn't a horse fly. It wasn't any kind like that. It was in between a house fly and a horse fly.
He sounds like the insects in the apocalypse.
Oh, come on, George. But anyway.
You never know.
Oh, well, let me tell you, its little eyes were beet red. And in his little tail, you know, in the back, white and black.
You're telling me there's this dark insect with red beady eyes.
Yeah.
And you're telling me you don't think it's from the apocalypse? It might be. How about another dimension?
George, come on.
You think I'm pulling your leg, don't you?
Yeah, you're pulling too hard there, George.
Well, there's something going on.
Good night, George.
Good night. Well, that's what kind of makes the program interesting, right? East of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? I wanted to know if you had heard about this yet. Last Saturday, I was reading through the paper and read an article about a boat that had been deserted, or it was found, I believe it was last Wednesday. And when the people found it and they went on board, the sails were, up. They were at full mast, and all the electronics were on and functioning. The table was set, but no one was on board.
Where was this found?
This was found near the Great Barrier Reef near Australia. And there were supposed to be, according to their investigation, there were supposed to be three older Australian gentlemen on board, but they couldn't find them. And all three life vests were present and accounted for. And their life raft was even found tied to the boat, but no one was on board.
Was there any evidence of a robbery on that craft?
No, they didn't mention anything as far as a robbery happening or anything like that.
Well, because, one, if it was pirates, they would have taken something, including maybe the boat.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Whenever you hear of disappearances like that, I always think about the possibility of an extraterrestrial situation where they just come down and beam them up and off they go. Mm-hmm. But, sometimes, at least in the movies, they take the whole ship too. But something happened. Something bad happened on that on that ship. And it was sudden, or if it was if it was a stormy thing, they would have put their life vests on.
Well, the interesting thing was they had talked to a meteorologist there in Australia, and they said that the most that these guys would have encountered was like a 22-mile-an-hour wind, which they said was perfect for sailing. And but oddly enough, one of the sails had been torn. They said it was pretty much shredded. But,
so are you saying like a huge gust could have blown them overboard?
Maybe. They said they searched for like for several hours, they said, and they searched over a wide area but couldn't find any bodies or anything.
Well, let me ask you something. This case seems to fascinate you. How come?
Well, I'm just interested in mysteries and stuff. This thing kind of reminded me of the ship, the Mary Celeste, and I just thought it was pretty interesting that what happened to these guys.
You try to picture three guys on a ship, and God knows what happened to them. But just put yourself in their place for just a moment, and whatever happened to them was horrible. And this occurs. I mean, that's kind of frightening, isn't it? West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Gary from San Francisco.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, how you doing? George, you completely missed a story today. It was in the San Francisco Chronicle, and it's been on our local news concerning the bees. The UCSF here in San Francisco, they think they have discovered, anyway, that it's caused by a microbe, a virus. That's it in a nutshell, really. They think it's a microbial, some type of infection.
Whatever it is, it's worldwide now.
Yeah, yeah. This is the latest, and it was in the Chronicle today if you want to check up on it.
Okay, I will do that. We've had reports that it was a virus. I still won't believe this as the definitive cause. I think there's something else. It could be a combination. Viruses have affected beehives since the beginning of man keeping bees. But this time, this is going on a global basis. Whatever it is, it's huge. The question is, if it is a virus, what's causing it? Is it a man-made virus? Is it done intentionally? These are things I think we really need to investigate as well. Let's go to another wild card line. Hello there.
Hey there. Is this Art?
Yes, sir. It's you. It's not Art. Hey. It's George, but that's okay. I'm his sidekick.
Okay. Art, my name's Dave, and I'm out of Dallas.
Yes,
and George, I have two quick comments and a quick question for you.
Sure.
Okay. The American scientist, philosopher, and Harvard professor Paul Rubini, I think that you had him on as a guest, Paul Rubini. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm saying yes.
Oh, okay.
Go
Well, anyways, he's made some very curious comments yesterday, as a matter of fact. It was in the newspaper, and it was on MSNBC. He claims that there has been a possible government censoring, okay, concerning 9/11. Any conspiracy connected with 9/11. Is that accurate, possibly?
It's his opinion, but it could be possible. No doubt about it.
Are you guys able to talk about it, or can I talk about it with you right now?
I talk about it clearly. We don't have the time with only 2 minutes to get your take on 9/11,
sure.
But I will tell you this. We have done shows.
You're not afraid, then, to talk about it, then?
Of course not. Of course not. We have done, I can't tell you how many programs about 9/11 with different views about it. I mean, this is the luxury and the greatness of this program, because we present views, alternative views, mainstream views, the straight take from what the government's view is. We will do that, and then you make up your mind. I make up my own as well. But in terms of freely talking about it, I shall tell you this. I have never, ever been asked not to cover a topic, not to cover a story in my entire life of close to now 37 years of broadcasting. Not once, not ever. They have always just basically relied on me to use my own taste and judgment to do this. Does that mean I don't wrestle with our producers and they wrestle with me about various aspects of a program and a show? We do that every day, believe me. Every day we critique the guests we had on the following night and look at what the response was and the fast blasts and the emotion involved and everything else. But in terms of covering this story, 9/11, we've done it all with the Peter Lances, the Alex Joneses, the various professors who've been on the show. And we will continue to do that. The various groups, the 9/11 movement people, Aaron Russo. I mean, I can't tell you the list because it's too long. But we do that on this show. And this is a national show. It's a mainstream national show. When I say mainstream, it's because it's on huge mainstream radio stations. You know, we do have that reputation of being the alternative. Nonetheless, it's one of the highest rated shows in the country. It's the highest rated show overnight. And yes, we do things like that. First time caller, just about a minute. That's all I have. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah,
George?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I had a story I wanted to share with you. I was listening the other night. You were talking about a large Black Panthers, I believe.
Yes.
In the country. And I was falling asleep listening to the radio station. And it reminded me of a story I heard growing up in Alabama. My uncle told me this. He was a duck hunter, and he said he used to go out, and when he'd be out in the swamps, in ball play swamps in Alabama in particular, he would sometimes hear this screech, this holler that would come across the swamps very loud, and it would sound like a woman getting her throat ripped out or just some horrible, horrible yell. And he said he would hear this every now and then, and when he would hear it, you know, the ducks would stop flying, and he would get out of the water.
I don't blame him. Did he ever see it?
Well, the story goes is that, as he would tell us this, is this creature called the White Thing. And that's all my family ever referred to it as. And supposedly the story goes it was like a large white dog-type creature that could stand up on two legs, and it had this scream that was blood-curdling.
It was almost like a chupacabra. Sounds like it. We'll be back in a moment with the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman, for a special three-hour program with 2 hours of your phone calls with him to answer all kinds of questions about UFOs next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.